Okay, I've turned on recording.
All right. And let me go to that. Hello, all. We'll get started in right about now. Looks like we've got certainly the important people on, right? If you're here. Can people see my screen?
Yep.
Yep.
What's the equivalent of being able to see it loud and clear? Bright and
actually,
bright.
Which screen? By the way, I'm sharing, right?
Could you press update such that everybody can see the full agenda because you have been adding things? Thanks.
All right. So we'll start with the antitrust policy because that's what we do. Welcome to the Indy Agent Working Group call. Linux Foundation meetings involve participation by industry competitors, and it is the intention of the Linux Foundation to conduct all of its activities in accordance with applicable antitrust and competition laws. It is therefore extremely important that attendees adhere to meeting agendas and be aware of and not participate in any activities that are prohibited under applicable U.S. state and federal or foreign antitrust and competition laws. Examples of types of actions that are prohibited at Linux Foundation meetings and in connection with Linux Foundation activities are described in the Linux Foundation antitrust policy available at the URL in this meeting. If you have any questions about these matters, please contact your company counsel, or if you are a member of the Linux Foundation, feel free to contact Andrew Updegrove of the firm Gesmer Updegrove LLP, which provides legal counsel to the Linux Foundation. That gets that part started. Announcements, we've got a couple of things. I was going to add a second one. This seems to be a source of some confusion, so I was going to let people know that Sam Curran and Stephen Curran are spelled differently but pronounced the same, the Curran part at least. So if you feel like stumbling because we spell our names differently, we pronounce it the same, and it's the way that people have been pronouncing Sam's name. Sam Curran, Stephen Curran. So there you go. Second announcement, IIW is next week. Some of us are busily creating things that we'll be presenting at IIW next week. Anyone want to share anything about IIW on this call? All right. It's an awesome experience. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I should say, if you are interested in the stuff that brings you to this meeting, you should probably want to come. Hopefully you can join us there. There is a book of proceedings that we produce with meeting notes afterwards. But being there is quite the experience and the most valuable conference I've ever attended.
I would agree with that. Me and my team, we're actually going to go. I was just wondering, is it just kind of like open? I've never been to one before. So like, how would I know where to find you guys so we can like, you know, meet up and all that stuff.
So it's not
you
that
will find it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they start with an open circle where everyone does a very quick introduction. And the whole thing is like open space. We make the agenda there. So you don't really have to, if you're not seeing an agenda online, you don't know who the speakers are, that's because you're one of them and you haven't proposed your topic yet. So it'll be easy to run into all of us. We do a quick circle where people mention their name and usually the organization or where they're from, and that way you can kind of identify. And there is plenty of time for conversation. So we're glad you're coming.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay. Nathan, you want to add something about the Hyperledger Ares proposal going to the TSC tomorrow?
Just a note that if you're not regularly on that call, it might be an interesting call to attend, so you can chime in or answer questions about why we think that this is a good idea. There are still a couple of to-dos left in the document. to resolve to make sure we have the its content complete before I move it over to the wiki. And they are very eager to have it in that wiki so that the technical steering committee members can start their review process throughout the day today and tomorrow. So I'm hoping as soon as I get the last couple of paragraphs typed into the document to move it over to the wiki and open it up for TSC review and questions. So watch for that link in the Rocket Chat channels and feel free to add any changes you have even during this call if you'd like.
Nathan, what's the meeting details on that for people who want to attend?
It's at 8 o'clock Mountain Time, which is pretty early Pacific time. I expect it's going to be a very, very full agenda, so I don't know whether we'll be at the beginning or at the end. I have advised them that we are trying to get at least a preliminary approval on the project prior to IIW so that we can socialize the idea amongst the rest of the decentralized identity community.
That's good. Are those to-dos?
Nathan, where do we find the call link for that?
The call link is in the Hyperledger community calendar. So if you go to the community tab, I believe there's the community calendar link over in that part of the wiki. And the to-dos, I've just put them in as comments. If you want to take a stab at any of those, go ahead and go into suggesting mode and see what you can write down.
Okay, I was just going to ask that. Are those to-dos for you to do or are those for others?
They could be me or others. If no one else steps in and does them in the next hour, I will be doing them as the call continues.
Got it. Okay. All right. We have a full agenda. I don't know if we'll get to things like the slippery slope, but we'll start with the first one, credential exchange. Sam's going to talk about payment decorator, Oscar on peer did method spec, and we'll see where we go from there. So I'll start on credential exchange. Let's see. I guess I will just... Yeah, I'll just open it up here. This is I think, going to be a fairly short call or session. I have updated these notes yet again from what's changed, so I'm just going to cycle through. There is a couple of things at the end that I might talk about. We've talked about these twice in detail. Basically, they were... it's been updated a couple of times. There was a couple of updates done yesterday as well, some minor changes as well. So I was just going to highlight sort of a couple of differences. I've put in places. So in doing the IIW work that we're planning for a demo, we have implemented credential exchange. And I would point out that last week we had our first inter-agent implementation exchange of credentials. I don't know if anyone else has done that, but basically a IndyCat agent, enterprise agent issued a credential to a street cred mobile agent, which accepted the credential and stored it and was then able to then prove it. So we've got the entire protocol going based on the link in this HackMD document. So I was going to highlight a couple of places in the credential where in the protocol where we've done things differently just because we needed to get it done. But that's the version 01 was not intended to replace the one in the hype. As far as the credential offer goes, I think we've got it pretty much. This is the credential offer. This tilde attach is still in the hype as tilde attach. I believe that is incorrect. Daniel, Sam, do either of you know? I believe it is supposed to be something like offer tilde attach. Is that not correct?
I think that was what we talked about. Daniel, do you remember?
Yes, I concur.
Yep. So it was supposed to be offer tilde attach.
Okay.
So that was so we had the option so that it could either be defined in line or referenced as an attachment.
It makes it much easier to go get the stuff if you actually need. So the other thing that, I was going to mention too is that we have the option of having the type be non base 64 encoded, which is the other thing that may help just accessibility of digging the data out. It's one less step. If you don't need it to be Base64 encoded, you can actually present it as JSON. And that was that made to the attachment hype, Daniel? I thought we made that
addition. Yeah, I think we did.
Yeah, so there's two things here. One is the offer tilde attached. The other thing is that we should not use Base64 encoded content. We should just use inline JSON content. It still is in the content
right.
block. Yeah, so the MIME type is might still be there, but instead of having Base64 underneath content, you have JSON, and then you just spit the JSON out, not encoded.
Okay.
By not encoded, I mean
I'm
not
taking basically. A couple of, yeah.
Okay.
And I'm just taking a couple of notes just so I can update the hype. When we did it in the version 01, so that's what these blue things are, we just had offer JSON with the basically this Base64 of what was provided from libindy as is. So in the actual, it sounds like the 1.0, you will be expected to take the libindy JSON string that you get back and convert it so that, or translate it so that it is proper JSON in this content section.
One more note on this slide is that the
yep.
offer tilde attach, I think is just yep. one offer, or are we doing multiple offers?
So yeah. what we, had, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, so the offer tilde attach, I thought the contents of that when it's, so if it's just offer, then it is the object unbase64 encoded. Defined in line, not references attachment. If it's offer tilde attach, then the contents is a string, which is the name, which refers to the nickname of the attachment, basically used to resolve that block. I thought we'd
But it's also possible to have a single attachment rather than a list of attachments when you name them like such. So if you call it an offer tilde attach, it could refer to a struct rather than an array, and the struct would be a single attachment.
Well, I would say we need to be more explicit when we are expecting to resolve a single element or multiple. So it needs to be offers. As the property name or offers tilde attachments. Otherwise, like there's
or we, you know, or we just don't have a
implied by the property name.
I agree, but we should just not have it should just be singular. Did we rest on whether we needed to have more than one offer in a single message?
So the intention for multiple was because the idea that you could offer it in multiple formats, not multiple credentials, but multiple formats of credentials, so that you could do a ZKP version and a JW credential.
Okay, that makes sense. So it still needs to be a list then, and it should be offers.
I think
attached,
so.
If it's going to be, although there are multiple forms of the same offer, I'm scratching my head.
Exactly. Yeah, it's supposed to be multiple forms of the same offer because you've got a single credential preview. That's telling you what the data is that you're going to be getting. And then here is the different options you've got for what format you want to receive it in. And that would depend on basically what your agent is capable of processing and holding or what you'd prefer.
Hmm. Okay. I'm not sure if we want to have multiple offers because we'll just end up in negotiation hell. I think we need some form of other way to measure that negotiation or to conduct that negotiation.
Well, we already have a negotiation circle, right? Offer and what's the other one called?
Proposal, and we've got request. I mean, request does not take an array. It only takes a single.
Right.
By the time you get to request, you have to have said what your choice is. So it's not exactly a...
So offer and proposal are the negotiation loop. And you keep going until the holder receives an offer that they like. And then they pass that single offer to the request.
Are we all right deferring this discussion to like a 0.2 credential exchange format? Can we, is it, say we're going to do this in 0.1?
No, this is, sorry, just to get the numbering right, Kyle, this is 1.0 we're talking about here. 0.1 is done, implemented, and it's only implemented by, as far as I know, two agents. And so 0.1 is gone. This is 1.0 we're talking about.
So I have a question as well about semantic versioning and SemVer in general. Should we be with a lot of the protocols we're implementing with Hypes be jumping straight to a 1.0? Or, I mean, I'm obviously with SemVer, before 1.0 version, every minor version is a breaking change, which will give us, otherwise we might end up eating up versions very, very quickly. I would, recommend what Kyle was sort of, I think you're trying to hint at, Kyle, that the next version of the credential exchange protocol be still a minor version pre 1.0. We can always roll to 1.0 at any point in time, but I don't think we should be in a hurry personally to roll 1.0. Because if we want to make a breaking change, we have to go straight to a 2.0 if we are
I think that's the point of SemVer. I don't understand that.
I'm not really worried.
I mean,
about
we don't run out of numbers. Yeah. I think we have enough numbers in the world, so I don't think we have to worry about that. And everything else we've done is called 1.0. The only reason we wanted to put 0.1 was because we wanted to do something. BC Gov wanted to do something for IIW, and just in case anyone wanted to join us, I think 1.0, because then you're not talking about this hype, you're talking about all the hypes, and now, like, we can name them the number on whatever you want as long as you follow the SemVer rules. If you want to start at 10.0, that's all up to you.
I concur there. I think that I'm not really worried about running out of SemVer numbers, and if it's version 157.1, that doesn't really bother me. Again, this is not user facing, this is developer facing. And I'm not excited about having different rules for 0.0 than I am, or 0.0 than I am about 1.0 and on. So I'm still sort of proposing that we stick with the pattern we've got.
The reality is when we go to this, this may be an array, but it's going to have one entry in it. And chances are it's going to be implemented with, you know, that way, because there is, you know, we don't have any other agents in our community yet, but we've just left the door open without bumping the version. We've left the door open for others.
So my thinking on this was a little bit more broader to the rest of the SSI community in terms of like trying to get interop with them. And I'm thinking about it in terms of breaking changes. So after a 1.0 release, I need to support 1.0, 2.0, 3.0, et cetera. But if it's in a 0.12, et cetera number, then when we do that breaking change from the 0 release to the 1.0 release, then we can actually say all that previous stuff you can drop and you can deprecate, and we're acceptable to saying that no one will use that stuff in the future.
There's no reason why we can't deprecate version 1, version 2, version 3 stuff either.
Yeah. And that's just saying
but it's more of an expectation around versioning that pre 1.0 release, it's you know, in an adopted fashion. That's why every minor release in a SemVer can be a breaking change, rather than a minor release has to be backwards compatible once it's post 1.0. It's the syntax. It's how the syntax works from SemVer's perspective, and it's generally accepted that, you know, like, yeah. But I
understand, although I'm not worried about deprecating things. For example, let's say we rest at 1.0 in the next like couple of weeks, okay? And then we're coming along, the conversations with the broader SSI community progress, and we end up either moving to a totally different message family, or we have a version 2, let's say, that has breaking changes in it. part of the goal of having an agent test suite is we will offer tests for both of them. And we clearly mark the previous one as deprecated, meaning don't build any new code like this. And then as the versioning of the test suite progresses, we can use that as a gauge to measure how much support there is for the new one, for the version two, such that we can deprecate and wipe out the version one. So I think as a community, we're small enough at this point that we can wipe out these earlier versions as we learn new things and move to better better formats.
For what it's worth,
I also
want to spend more time on this. I think this is, it's going to work. We'll have all the same capabilities either way. We're just numbering differently.
Yes. Okay, moving along.
Okay, all right. I mean, so we're going to call this offers tilde attach. I didn't quite get what options can go in here, but I think that basically depends on the attachment type. Is that correct? So I can do different things in here depending on how I want to use offers attachment, offers attach.
We can, I think we should promote a recommendation of a single format to promote early compatibility. And then we can work on expanding that format over time. For example, the base 64 JSON inline.
Okay, and so the initial version is going to be this with including application JSON, and this will be, it'll be actual JSON. It will not be base 64. The content will be this.
Yeah.
You guys see what I'm pointing at?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. So I will be doing that and making sure those are updated, or that's, referenced across the board. And I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on all the other ones because of this. I think they're all pretty much the same. There was a threading concern that got addressed. This is the proposal. The change in the proposal is that optional schema ID and cred def ID have been added. So if you want to propose a specific schema ID or a specific cred def ID, those would be in here. Little concern as to how that would happen. Yeah, and not sure that's how that'll evolve when we get to interoperability, but I think we're best to leave that in there. Any comments on that?
I think it's a good
okay. Thing. Okay. Negotiation we've talked about. So this is credential request. Again, I don't think there's any difference. This is the 0.1 down here. Once we fix the attach. Credential request. This is interesting. This should not be an array. So I think we agree that you can only request a single credential via this mechanism. Would we agree? And this should not be an array, but a single entry, singleton.
When you mean request, are we just referring to the data, or are you saying you shouldn't be able to refer multiple formats as well?
You should not be able to request multiple formats in a single protocol run. Ooh. Instance of the protocol.
We may want to leave this a list. There's a case where I could receive the same credential in multiple formats, but only want to pay for it a single time. And in that case, I'd want to include the payment information a single time and be able to request multiple formats. Like I want the zero knowledge proof and the JWT version or whatever at the same time. And that way I can present either of them. And the issuer could just do that as part of the same transaction.
Sounds complicated, but if that's the way we want it.
any thoughts on that?
Reluctantly, I think you're right.
I don't like the complexity, but I can see that as a use case that would be obvious, particularly in a circumstance where we have a variety of credential formats out of the gate and people are going to want to be able to interoperate with multiples.
Okay. I believe we all agree that the credential reject and credential ACK, and same for presentation, those should be removed.
So the removal would go along with officially adopting the standard ACK and the
yes.
problem report. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And I agree. When in the spot in the docs where we adopt them, what we should do is indicate, for example, the problem report, different types of like error codes and what they mean.
Agree.
So it's a how to apply the adopted
problem. Exactly. Okay. Okay. So I will make sure that goes in as a request to change it. Right now, it's kind of a, some things were removed, others were left in. So it's definitely in some in-between state that needs to get cleaned up. This flow is the same as we've seen before. So I don't think we need to spend any time. The presentation request, again, any questions about whether this should be a multiple versus a singleton?
I think it's got to be a multiple if we go with the multiple formats argument.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But it still needs the request attach, I believe.
Yes. Yes.
It needs to not be.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes. This needs to be fixed everywhere. Yeah. Prudential. This is proposal. Again, I think it's missing a comment on the proposal. I think that should continue to be part of each one. Sorry, I'm taking a note.
The presentation proposal is the one that I think we are probably the least mature on. There's a PR that Brent Zundel and Ken Ebert raised about presentation proposals, and I don't know if we've reconciled their thinking against this, but I think we need to before we feel confident we've got all the right stuff in it.
Okay.
Thank you for pointing that out, Daniel.
We had a question come in the chat that I was looking to understand. Becky.
Good. Thank you.
You'd asked something about a correspondence between the credential offer and a credential on the global ledger. Can you clarify that question?
Well, I was wondering if there was a pointer in this JSON document pointing to a credential that's already sitting on the ledger.
Do you mean a credential or a credential
definition?
A credential definition.
I guess I was talking about the I was assuming that the schemas and the credential definitions would be out on the ledger with the way you're referring to those.
Yes,
correct, those they are.
The credentials themselves are never actually put on the ledger on purpose.
Okay. All right. They're stored on the ledger so that they're not sitting out there that could possibly be decrypted at some point. Okay, I'm with you now.
Yeah. We strongly suggest that transaction semantics disallow putting any of that kind of data on your ledger.
Okay, thank you.
Well, in a minute here, we'll get to the point where we actually pass the credential in a message. So that's how it gets moved.
You pass the credential in a message?
Yeah, so we pass it from the issuer to the holder in a message, then we'll get to there in a second.
Okay.
But there it is. That's
the credential. Now, what we're talking about here is this is the proof of the credential, the presentation of the claims within the credential. So this is, and what I think the 2.0 question is does this presentation request format, there's a possibility it will live on the ledger as well. Is that what you were referring to, Daniel?
That's part of what I was referring to. There's some other subtleties also. But that's definitely one of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So we've got that.
This is Ken. I wanted to just make sure that we clarify that we're trying to do the schema, the rich schema stuff in a way that doesn't impact the ability for this early work to occur. So we're trying not to raise issues or call out the differences between what we have proposed versus what we're trying to do right today. And so we don't want to just be disruptive in that way. it may cause disruption later, but we thought that was a good trade-off between disrupt now versus disrupt later.
Yeah, and the other thing that Mike is saying here is the reason why you saw all this tilde attach stuff being discussed is because there's a separation of concerns between the messages that move stuff back and forth and the actual pieces of data that represent credentials or presentations and so forth. We think that the versioning on those needs to be able to evolve separately, which is why a credential is an attachment. It's not defined in the schema of the message. It's just you get to the part where you have a credential and you say, okay, now attach the credential, and therefore there's a loose coupling between the versioning of those two things.
Exactly, and that helps preserve the independence and allows us to get to credential exchange earlier and then later adopt something that might be a more enhanced version of the same type of protocol.
Ken, we knew we were going to be trouble, so we gave you a special sandbox.
Thank you.
And no, we appreciate your work. We appreciate your work.
But there's a really important part, which is that the fact that we're doing that needs to be really emphasized in this, because implementations may not take that into account, may not take advantage of it. We should be encouraging people to take advantage of that. In other words, again, separate their concerns.
Agreed.
Okay. Presentation. Again, I don't think there's any controversy, same as previously. We've got our comment in here, same presentation attach, still an array, and so on. So we've got that. These are the slides. So I think we're good with all that. I will update the PR with the comments we've collected today. So if there's still some additional ones we want to address. Others are welcome to do that, but I'll cover the ones we've talked about here and point those out. We've never got to these two slides, which is some of the issues that were raised as part of this. I'll put these out there as if anyone wants to make a comment on these bullet points. I personally would like to see in the credential offer a flag or a field, sorry, that says this offer is to replace a revoked credential. And it's a way of informing the holder that the issuer has revoked their credential and they're offering a new credential. Any comments on that as a mechanism? So basically pass a credential ID that the issuer and the prover would know about so that that would inform the holder prover that the credential that they hold has been revoked.
I think it's a great idea. I wouldn't want that to be the only way to find out that something's been revoked, but that's a good secondary way to find out.
Yeah.
Further, I like the idea of being able to correlate the replacement credential with the revoked one. I think that could be really helpful from a receiving agent that receives the new credential, and it'll help them do their bookkeeping internally.
Yeah. Okay, so I will push on that and propose a specific change, and I think that covers these two points. I didn't really understand this one, so unless anyone has a comment, I'm going to move on to the next page. Going once, going twice.
I want to say something about it. The credential format that we're using today has cut. It's like a docx in the sense that docx is actually an XML file format, but the XML-ness of it is not its most important characteristic.
It's
the fact that it's associated with Microsoft Word that it's most important. And in the same way, a credential is an XML document or a JSON document, or it could be a CBOR document or whatever, but I don't think we want the behavior of a credential, if it's attached to an email message or it's laying around on disk and somebody double clicks it, I don't think we want it to be generically perceived as a JSON document or whatever. it's more relevant to say this is a credential than it is to say it's JSON. So I think we need a standard MIME type. And when we use the attachment mechanism inside our agent messages, that would beg the question, should we be calling this JSON or should we be calling it something more specific?
That brings up something interesting to me. I think that actually solves the negotiation hell that I was seeing, which is you can use that MIME type to then describe the credential format that exists within it to be able to figure out this is a JWT that's only useful for, you know, certain credential exchanges, whereas this one's a different type. Did you see it going down that path as well?
Yes, that's what I was assuming.
So right now it's clear nickname is intended to represent that, I think, and MIME type not. So what you're saying here is the concept of libindy presentation would be brought into this MIME type.
Right. Yes, although I'm not sure libindy presentation would be a very great MIME type, but it is more specific than JSON, yeah.
But the concept is to migrate this into this and have one. So that is like what you proposed for agent messaging. It's got a MIME type, right? An agent message and a plain text agent message and an encrypted one.
Right.
You're saying that some of these things need their own MIME type as well.
Right.
That sounds like a separate hype.
Yeah, it does. I don't think it's something that we have to do a lot about right now. It's just kind of a bookmark of something to think about.
Yeah. Good. This is the payment one, so we're going to have that. This is the last one, and I think I don't want to have this conversation as related to this because this is really tied to the schema 2.0 pieces, but overlays and where they fit in. So I don't really think we want to have that discussion here. I think this is just a note from the developers to say, hey, we want to make sure we cover the at type fields in here so there's more detail on them. So
on
overlays, that's everything.
On overlays, I would love that to be a minor release, additive update, so that we additionally include some information that we're passing around, but it doesn't necessarily change what we're already passing. That's what my hope is for anyone else who's curious about how we're going to approach that.
Right, but that's a much bigger topic than just credential exchange because it really
it totally
we need
is.
To figure out how that fits into 2.0 and
and it's worth waiting on that to let that conversation progress on its own. But I'm hoping that it's additive when we get there, which means that you'll still be able to process the message and ignore the overlays in the meantime while you're updating your code.
Yeah, I think that piece is so flexible that we can kind of we can really leave that to the last minute and then just see where it fits into everything. So it's fine.
All right, that is the end of this piece. As I mentioned, as I put into the notes in the agenda, there is the link to the actual PR is in there as well, so you can take a look at that as well as the link to this if anyone's still interested in this. I think that's all we need to talk about on this one. So I'm going to stop sharing that. I'm going to share just briefly. Sam, I think we're going to you next.
Yeah, I think so.
This is a much earlier version of it. So yeah, Sam, do you want to take over? I will unshare and you're going to talk about the payment decorator hype, which is new and interesting. Yes.
Okay, I'm going to kick off your sharing because apparently I can do that when I'm the meeting host. I just realized that earlier. It just shares and saves an awkward step. Okay, I think this is the right window. Okay, so there's two things that I'm going to talk about here. Both links are actually present. So we have the payment decorator hype. This is one of the newer PRs in the Indie Hype repository. There's also a payment section. This is on Nikita's repo, and so it's not in the main line yet, and so I've included the link also in the meeting notes, but he and I sort of independently came up with this, and there's a lot of comparison back and forth. I wanted to acknowledge the existing of this once, and I what I'm hoping we do is we take everything we need out of this one and stick it in the other one that I'm about to review. And then this will include notes about application of the payment decorator and a link to this other hype. So that's how I anticipate this happening. You'll notice that he also used the decorator in there. I just got a little bit more formal about how I did it over here. So in case anyone's run into both of them, that's sort of where the scope of this discussion is. I need to preface this conversation. So I want to do a better job describing some groundwork for those that are new to the topic. And then I also need to preface this by the fact that I don't really know what I'm doing here. I've tried to forge forward with the understanding that I have. So if you have more understanding about these things, I really, really want to hear from you and get your input so that we can make this better. So the background of this is that this is closely related to our credentials exchange discussion, because being able to pay for an issued credential or the presentation of a credential is something that is a really obvious thing that we've talked about as a community, but we haven't just described the mechanism to actually do that yet. Indie networks have the ability to have payment involved. There's libnullpay, and then the sovereign instance of Indie has a payment method there as well. And the goal with a payment decorator is to solve or to include payment information in a generic enough way that any payment method can actually be used here. Potentially like something like fiat as well, not necessarily that's purely Indie, but really any payment. So that's the goal. I have two payment decorators that I'm introducing here. One is payment request and the other one is payment receipt. And here's the reference. The idea here is that you have a payment request. This is an array of things, with the idea that you might accept more than one payment method. So there might be sovereign tokens that you're planning on paying it, or some sort of fiat or Bitcoin or something. And you can say, you can either pay me this much on with sovereign tokens or this much with Bitcoin, depending on how that goes. And then the user can choose. So when in the presence of multiple entries here, this is considered to be an or. These are equivalent things, and you pick one that you like best. The method indicates what type of payment method thing you're doing here. And then the unit and the amount are both related to that. The unit is designed to sort of indicate what the unit of this thing is. And then the amount is complicated. It's in here as a string because of some concerns about floating point inaccuracies. This is still a larger question mark in my head. And then recipient is, as we need this, of course, the question mark is the precise format this ought to be in. The recipient is where this is going. So this would be like, you know, a Bitcoin address or, you know, a sovereign payment address or something that actually matters here. So there's a handful of things that I left for potential future things because I didn't want to bog down the initial conversation with them. One of them is non-required payments. So this is like a suggested payment type of a thing. Maybe you have someone that runs some sort of credential issuing service and they don't require payment, but they would really like you to help fund them. And this could indicate that I will still do this if you don't pay me, but I'd really like you to. The other options is that you make multiple payments at once, meaning in order to get this, you have to pay this address this much and this address this much instead of the OR that we're operating on up above. Also, terms of expiration, this may use the timing decorator, but meaning this price is only valid for a certain amount of time. Certainly, I can't show up a year later and expect to pay for a candy bar at the price it was a year ago, right? So this is the idea behind the payment request. And the receipt is almost a mirror for most things with a couple of additions. One is that related requests, these are the IDs of the payment requests up here. So this is the idea of the request, not the message that it's in. And this is the payment receipt that satisfies one or more of these things. It's also potentially possible for someone to make a payment and send a receipt without actually having been sent a request at all, in which case this may actually not be an ID. This may be empty, saying, hey, I've paid you with this method. I just want to let you know. And that could be like a donation or a tip jar scenario. The recipient there's some redundant information that may not have to be in here as long as a request is made, but given the payment receipt may actually be just accompanied by itself, including the recipient, for example, the method, et cetera, is a really good idea. The receipt is, the idea here is this is the information that can be used to locate the payment by the person who got paid. So this could be, depends a lot on the payment method, but this might be some output of the payment mechanism that that allows you to quickly identify the payment on the other side. I, as part of the guidance here, I use the sovereign payment method stuff, and there's this extra field. There's also a question mark in my mind, which is why I gave it a question mark. Certainly we may want to expand this, for example, to have an optional comment field or something like that. So that, you know, if you're in a tip jar scenario or other types of payment, you could include a user facing note there. So that's the information about that.
Sam, was the amount, Sam? Is the amount there supposed to have quotations on it or not?
It is, but it depends on a lot on what the format conversation. I recognize that going out, but I thought if someone's going to ask that question, it'll make sure we have that conversation.
Cool.
So it's supposed to be the same as this, but we just have to decide what that actually is.
Yep.
Sam?
Yep.
Okay, so My impression of payment, and maybe I've got this wrong, but this sort of assumes that the two people participating are willing to participate in the payment. And what I had thought was going to be happening was there would be some sort of network-based enforcement of payment, so that, and in particular, the scenario is this. In order to verify a credential such that payment goes to the issuer, there has to be a payment made before the verification can happen. And I'm trying to understand, and I thought that was a really important and perhaps the most crucial use case. I give you a credential. I'm a university. I give you a transcript credential. And then when you want to prove it to an employer, the university gets paid. Now, in this is a cooperative thing. I'm, you know, making a credential. It's happening between the two agents that are talking. But in the case that I'm talking about, the person that's got to get paid is the non-participant in the conversation. And the idea was, I thought that there would be an enforcement mechanism somehow that the network would provide. So that's basically my question. Does that make sense?
Can I react to that, Sam, or do you want to first?
Shoot, no, you please.
So there definitely needs to be a case that payment happens between parties other than the ones that are engaged in the primary flow, but enforcement is a separate question in my mind. I could imagine the holder and a verifier engaging in a proof thing, and at some point you get to the stage where we say, okay, proof is going to be based on this credential that came from the university, therefore we have to go pay the university. And I think that the way that I had heard it described is the proof actually came over so that it's held by the verifier, but the verifier doesn't know, in fact, whether the credential is legitimate until something gets unlocked about it. And the unlocking is now between the verifier and the university. So the verifier contacts the university, and they don't contact it in a way that allows them to disclose who the holder is, but rather they say, I have this thing that I need to know if it's a legitimate signature. And the university says, well, pay me. And so now there's a new pairwise interaction going on. It's not the one between the prover and the verifier. It's the one between the verifier and the university. And once the verifier has paid the university, then the university says, okay, here's proof that that particular signature actually came from me. So that's not an enforcement mechanism. That's basically a cooperative mechanism, but it is a third party conversation. Now,
right. Okay. Now, is that mechanism, that unlocking, has that been thought through so that there's an actual solution, or is this just sort of what is being considered?
No, okay. I think there is an actual design that thinks all of that through from beginning to end. I may not be describing it very well, but I have heard it described to me before, and my impression was it was pretty thoroughly thought through.
Yeah, I've received the same impression as well from when I first heard about this about a year ago.
Now, I'll clarify that the thought through does not include the definition of the appropriate message families, but the cryptographic aspects have been thought through.
Right.
Okay, that makes sense. And that definitely we'd have to add as probably not just a decorator, but an actual message family.
Yes.
Yeah, I likely. Would say okay. It would be a completely separate message family that supports a completely different message format. Where you're doing,
you would still use this decorator, is my guess, but it would be a decorator that goes onto a unlock message family.
Yep, that makes sense. All right, I definitely would like to see that included in how we present the general payment model, because I think it's a really that use case is really important.
I agree. I think Brent and Mike Lauder would be the two guys that could give us the best details about it. I don't know if either of them's on the call, but we can track them down and ask them to come back and provide us with some material.
So great, thank you. Are we really thinking that a decorator is the best way to deal with payment? Like, what is the benefit of doing this in a decorator than as opposed to like a sub protocol?
So a decorator gives you the advantage that anytime payment is passed in any message family, it's passed the same way. And it avoids anyone designing a message family from having to come up with their own unique way of handling it.
Yeah, but this limits you. What if I wanted to use some kind of escrow thing for payment or something that's not exactly this flow?
The decorator doesn't imply a flow. The decorator implies the mechanisms that you would add to the flow in order to make it work. So in an escrow scenario, then for example, I would you would using a message family present the goods to the escrow, and I using a message family would pay the money to the escrow company that then they pay to you using these decorators, and then I would receive the goods from the escrow. So this, the decorators themselves do not imply any message flow at all. Just the fact that when you have a spot in your flow where this payment message or information needs to pass, it passes in this format.
So let me say something that maybe bridges the worldviews between Devin and Sam here. I remember as a college student numerous times showing up to a testing center or someplace and being told that I had to produce a receipt that showed that I had paid for my fees or something along those lines. This flow, as currently designed, doesn't allow me to prove to a third party that I have paid somebody else. So I think we might want to broaden it a little bit. I'm not feeling like payment is a message family. I think decorators is the right approach, but I think we maybe need to genericize or add some flexibility about proving so that we don't assume that it's two parties and that it's always party A that pays party B and then shows them that. Because sometimes you have to prove it to somebody else that you paid.
I would like to interject. This is Oscar. A payment receipt is, to my view, a verifiable credential, or am I wrong?
Certainly what I was thinking. I would agree. I think that's exactly what it is.
It depends on
the hammer.
I mean, it depends on the payment method. We can start, and I have a note in here that proof of payment would be a stronger form of receipt rather than including simply an identifier that lets you look it up on the other side. I mean, we have a little bit of a dance here between designing something that works really well for our cryptographic use cases and maybe the cost of excluding other types of payment method or cryptographic use cases that don't allow for the same sort of a thing. Maybe I can pay with Bitcoin, but I can't present a proof of payment with Bitcoin, where if I pay with maybe a sovereign token, I can present proof of payment.
Right. So like Venmo, as an example, if you're using Venmo to pay for something, you probably can't produce cryptographic proof of that. All you can do is say, here's the receipt number that you can look up.
Right. So, it's worth noting here that the recipient here does not need to be the person who's actually sending the message. So this does support flows where you need to pay a third party. And then when you say, hey, I paid, I paid the third party and here's where it went, there can be a separate interaction between the person who receives the payment receipt decorator in a message and the person who actually received the money in order to verify that that actually happened. I'm very interested in expanding the types of flows that this supports through additional or modified decorators. So I don't think that we're done with two necessarily, but I was unable to articulate to myself other scenarios that these would not solve. And so conversations about, hey, scenario X doesn't work here because we're missing something, I'm very interested in.
I've got one, actually.
Tell me.
So imagine I'm the verifier receiving request of payment from the issuer. For example, I'm the employer receiving request of verification for transcripts. And I don't want to make the payment for that. I want to defer that payment off to the holder. So I make a request for payment. I push that request for payment off to the holder. And then the holder gives me the receipt or the confirmation state proof hash, for example, if we're using sovereign tokens. And then I take that and give that to
the heavy heart at the Crystal Lake.
Sorry.
Kyle, was that you? Can I describe that back to you? And you tell me if I got it right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so an employer goes to pay the verification of transcript, but they don't want to pay it. They expect the applicant, right, the student, previous student, hopefully future employee, to pay it. So they're going to want them to pay it, and then they'll provide proof of payment to actually get the receipt. So in this case, I envision a flow where you have a message family. Again, we haven't talked about what that message family looks like, but you have a message family where you do the credential exchange to get the actual credential from the applicant, right? From the previous student, hopefully future employee. But then you need to unlock it. So you make a request to negotiate this with the issuer using that new message family, and they require payment. You're going to take this payment thing. I hit a button on my mouse that I didn't mean to. You're going to take the payment thing and you're more or less going to pass it. You're going to take the payment request that you receive and you're going to pass it to the student and yep. With a message that says you need to pay this, right? In some sort of a message family we haven't defined yet. When the student pays it, the student's going to provide you a payment receipt. You're going to take this and provide the same receipt back to the institution in order to verify the transcript, then you receive your unlock key and you can verify the credential.
Okay.
So in that case, you're basically going to tunnel the payment request and the payment receipt, and that's okay.
Okay. That makes sense. The other one that I was thinking of is a split payment. So for example, I go to a restaurant, I'm requested to pay a bill of $250 and I want to split that between my five friends. You should be able to support both me making the payment and then them paying me, which is supported through this because I do five separate requests, as well as receiving five direct payments from the five people, and I act as the tunnel to get the message back. I think that's how it would work, but I'm open to other ideas as well.
So a couple of ideas there. One is that the amount here doesn't actually have to match the amount here, and that's for you to resolve. So they could submit one payment request. You forward the payment request, maybe by modifying the amount to your friends, and they can actually pay the restaurant directly, let's say. But each of them is going to pay a portion, and the person would receive payment of, that all related to this one request. They're going to receive, like, let's say five payments, and then it's up to them to decide that they've been sufficiently paid before they don't send the cops after you is my thought on how that would flow.
Yep, that works. I just really wanted to seed those ideas. I'm not sure where they'll go.
Well, yes, and I imagine we're going to come up with future ones here. Stephen, you have a comment?
Given the time, I'd like to stop conversation on this, in that I think this has given us all a whole bunch to think about, and we're going to have to come back and revisit this. So I'm thinking we stop here and move on with the agenda, unless anyone has any final words. Is that okay? And we'll, because I think this has given so much for us to think about first.
So can I like have a final 2 minutes of closing?
You may. Closing arguments, please.
Closing arguments. I have example credentials offer and a credential request, which is where the payment request and the payment receipt seems to fit inside of the credential thing. You'll notice that I'm not trying to be complete here. I didn't want to like repeat the whole other hype. I just wanted to give an example of application here. The thing that I most don't know about is, I have a couple thoughts down here at the bottom. One is that if the payment method changes to a JSON LD type, we could actually allow for different payment attributes inside of the decorator. And is that a good thing or a bad thing? That's an open question. And then we have the thought, is a payment receipt too confusing with a consent receipt? That's another piece of thought. The thing that I'm most unsure about is the bundle of method, unit, and amount. And amount is probably the one that I'm sort of most unsettled about, because it would be nice to have a consistent way of passing a unit, but we want to avoid floating point problems, but it also has to be like easily validated. You can't have like multiple decimal points in there, even though a string will allow, for example. So that's what I'm most concerned about. I don't need feedback live on this call, but please reach out to me in Rocket Chat or submit a comment to this hype. If you have knowledge of these sorts of things, or you have examples, or anything that you think would be useful, even if you don't have the answer, but you have a problem that you don't think this solves yet, I would love to hear from you. And that's my final comment.
Kyle, do you remember the 64-bit integer issue that the Sovereign Token team ran into, or is that something we need to track down Brent to comment on?
No, I remember it. Essentially, the languages we were using were limited to 64 bits, and we had to do some decimal point messing around with to handle it. We were looking at going into 128-bit sizes, but most languages didn't have full support for it yet. So we stuck with 64 bits, and it impacted that in some ways. I'm not sure if they updated it since I was separated. So.
Okay. That's not the only issue. I mean, the issue also revolves around JSON itself. JSON itself is not very opinionated about the precision or, you know, numerics in general. And so,
and dates, you know, but yes.
And so, you know, whatever language ended up deserializing it, like, you really couldn't be totally sure what level of precision or what kind of number it was going to be cast into. So that created a lot of interoperability issues.
It feels like a string is safe. Anyway, we can talk about this in another venue, but please, if you have any info, send me some comments so that we can guide this conversation. Okay. Let me stop sharing then.
Thank you, Sam. All right, next topic. I can see it on my screen, but I won't share again. Oscar, you wanted to talk about the period spec. So do you want to share your screen?
Yes, hopefully it's working. So I have a 4K screen, and I'm not sure how it comes across. So is this something you can read?
Yep,
yeah,
looks good to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, some of you may have noted that Daniel and I got into an interesting discussion about the use, the value of the UUID method, the cryptographic method, to create the value of the peer-did. And the discussion at some point became confusing because to the both of us, we noticed that we were at different discussing at different levels. So we came to the conclusion that some structure in the discussion was needed. So the thing that I'm proposing, and actually it's Daniel that needs to decide whether he wants to accept this proposal, because it will be a discussion between the two of us But of course, any of the indie agent participants is very welcome to join the discussion. So let me show you the decision tree that I've drafted based on the arguments that I heard from Daniel. First of all, I don't know who was it in the call that said that the burden of proof should be on my side, and I agree with that. I mean, the UUID method has been well established, so my bold statement that it's useless and should be removed requires justification. So the argument one that I heard from Daniel was that, well, the UUID is not a burden at all. It's easy to implement, so why bother? So the thing I need to defend is the opposite of that.
So Oscar, can I interrupt for a minute?
Sure.
I'm slightly lost in the conversation. I'm familiar with the peer did spec, but I don't know where the argument's starting.
Okay. The peer did spec says that you need to create the DIT identifier using the first verification key from your DIT document by performing some cryptographic, well, Daniel can tell better how it exactly works.
Yeah, so you basically take the upper 128 bits of your public verification key and say that's the first, that's the value of your DID. That's what the spec says.
Yes.
Right, okay.
So going on, so the first argument is, well, it's easy to implement, so why have this discussion at all? So that will be my first burden of proof. The second burden of proof is that Daniel mentioned at least one use case, I think it was Man in the Middle, where the UUID is a need to have. So I would need to argue that UUID is nice to have at best. So find counter arguments to Daniel's scenario.
One more time.
One more question.
Yes, sure.
Yeah. One more question.
The UUID that we're talking about is actually that upper 128 bits. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm using UUID as a very sure thing for, but exactly.
Okay.
I think so, the term is universal something identifier.
Universal unique identifier.
So, but there are two different things there. You can have a universally unique identifier, and then you can base the DID on the var key, the initial var key. And those are actually two separate things.
Yeah, and if you go into the UUID spec, there, I think UUID 4 has some of those properties.
Yeah, okay. So to be semantically correct, and perhaps I should immediately include what we mean by UUID.
And the contrast here while Oscar is typing is that Oscar had said, look, you could just pick, random strings that were convenient to you as the DIDs. You don't need to have something that has any particular amount of entropy or uniqueness as long as it's unique within a context. I think, is that a fair summary of the alternative idea, Oscar?
That's correct. However, the alternative idea is only relevant when we have gotten to stage 4.
Okay.
Because when there is no problem, whether when the UUID is a solution that is a must-have for all scenarios, then my alternative makes no sense at all.
Would you see the identifier part of the DID then becoming human readable?
At this moment, I'm not ready yet to have a proposal there. So okay. Yes, it could be human readable. It could be something else. It could be still 21, 22 characters of base 58 coding. Only once we are getting to stage 4, we need to think about alternatives. But my base hypothesis is that Daniel will manage to convince me at a much earlier stage. So, of course, for the interest of the debate, I will try to go all the way to the bottom.
I would say that one of the things I would really be happy about here is to have some other people participate in the conversation, because I'm articulating ideas that I have come to believe, but I'm not always the original proponent of an idea. In the case of the cryptographic method, there are others who propose that, and I just became convinced it was a good idea, but they may have better rationales than I do in some cases. So, or on the other side, maybe other people say, yeah, what Oscar says here makes a ton of sense, and here's why. If it's just me and Oscar that have this conversation, that's okay, but it would be less optimal than having a bunch of people all come to a strong consensus.
Yeah. So by the way, the process, so I will be guiding the process while Daniel will be the jury and judge. And my plan is, for every argument, I write a document that presents my argument as well, good as possible. And then Daniel and all the others can critique my arguments. And then we have a proper documentation of the arguments. And once we have done the full circle of discussion, then we can move on. Either decide that we go to the right, or so in case of a no, we go to the right. In the case of a yes, we go to the next stage.
Yeah.
So,
where I sort of put on the unique identifier and putting the constraint of it deriving from a key, I think that's an extremely useful property of the paired spec for several reasons. For example, it's a similar sort of, it's a mirrored sort of circumstance that SideTree have done. They base 64, the DID document, they have two valid forms of the same and their DID method spec, which means that if it derives from a key, it means proof becomes easily proven.
May I interrupt you, please? May I interrupt you, please?
Yeah.
The reason I'm interrupting you is that because of the complexity of the debate, we don't want to do the debate online, but we want to structure the debate. So at this moment, my proposal is only about how we are going to structure the discussion, and we're not trying to conclude it in the next few minutes.
Okay. Fair enough.
So the argument that you were saying is that it's useful in many cases. That's an argument in the category 3. And of course, we only will discuss category 3 arguments if we have fallen through from argument 1 and argument 2. Does that proceed? Does that make sense procedurally?
Yeah.
Okay.
We often have ad hoc debates on these calls, rather than everything being in sort of written form. We often offer updates weekly in the form of hypes, and then we kick them around in terms of a discussion point in more of an interactive fashion, but. Yeah, I agree. There is complexity to articulating the different sides that you want to sort of discuss here in this. So I'm happy with that.
One of the things that's happened in the earlier conversation is that I was particularly guilty of this, is that I would talk about a particular issue and then move on to something else. Not so much that I thought I'd resolved it, but I was trying to go kind of breadth first. And I think it was driving Oscar crazy. So,
well, I think that my constant nagging, why, made you crazy as well. So I apologize for that.
Well, it's all fine because, like I said, the idea that we want to end up with needs to be defensible, and we need to be able to show the world that we've thought it through carefully. So I'm content to go through the exercise. I had been operating on a different way, which is closer to what you just suggested, Tobias, where I was kind of in ad hoc way throwing out ideas. And I think Oscar really wants to do the structured way, which is fine. So let's do that.
Yeah. Well, the structured way, whatever the outcome will be, means that we immediately have all the documentation needed. So that will make my promise at the end also easier. So anyway, so the four arguments is are, well, the UUID method is no problem. It is a must-have for all cases. It moreover, it adds value to most of the cases, and it's not troublesome. It's not troublesome at all. And then any of those arguments would lead to the conclusion that UUID should stay. Of course, and the Boolean end of all the counter arguments would result in getting it removed. And of course, if ever we get to stage four, then we need to go into a debate like, okay, it's troublesome, but it has some value in some cases. But I don't think we're there yet. I think the most interesting ones will be number one and number two, but we'll see.
Two questions for you, Oscar. Yeah. I'm noticing argument one and argument four look very similar.
Yes.
What is the difference between the two? And then also one thing I like to understand is troublesome is a very subjective word in my mind.
Yes.
What does it mean to you?
That is exactly the thing that I will pose in my argument. So troublesome means that the argument gives Daniel headaches, and that is very subjective indeed. So if I can't make an argument that gives Daniel headaches, then I've lost the argument, and then the answer is no.
Now I'm envisioning a Daniel headache meter. This is awesome.
Yeah. I like that idea too. So the whole idea is that the burden of proof in any of the stages will be on my side. So this is sort of the flow diagram that I've been proposing with four potential starting points. So we still need to discuss where we start. So we have four arguments and three possible outcomes. And also, in order to keep things a bit clear, of course, up to the judgment of Daniel, is that we have some ground rules, like no wild goose chases, no moving backwards, no skipping forwards, no populist arguments, and going all the way to the bottom. And all the way to the bottom means that if I convince Daniel that the answer is yes, 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 then we will remove the UUID.
Yep, I think that's a fair approach, and I'm willing to do it. It will be time consuming, and so I will probably be biting my tongue occasionally, wanting to say, well, but let's skip ahead. But I'm going to try not to do that, because I think it will give us a nice, crisp resolution if I don't. So
thank you.
So as a point of order, we've got 10 minutes left in the normally scheduled call.
Yeah.
And I'm imagining we're not going to get to the end of this in 10 minutes.
Oh, yes, we are, because we are almost at the end. This is the final part, that is the judging. As I said, the criterion will be Daniel's headache. So if Daniel says, well, this discussion is starting to go in circles and I don't see any new arguments, then Daniel can decide whether it's a yes or no. And of course, any decision that has an impact on the peer-led spec, it needs to be implemented. And of course, if I agree with the decision, then I will help implementing it. And of course, if I disagree, then in the ultimate case, I may even start a fork. But of course, I have no intention of doing so. I think to having a crisp peer-led spec, I mean, I like almost everything from the peer-led spec, and it's just this part that I don't understand.
I just want to say that I did not propose that Daniel should be the judge. Oscar proposed that.
That's correct. So, Daniel, you still need to accept.
So I don't mind expressing my opinion, but really, I'm not the owner of the peer did spec in the most important sense. I'm the guy that wrote most of the verbiage, but I did it after talking to a lot of other people, many of whom are on this call, but not all of them. So, you know, for me to be the judge and jury is a little bit maybe of a inappropriate thing. It'd be nice if a number of other people in the community would at least express their opinion at some point.
I'll definitely be tracking the conversation, but I recognize I have a bias towards Daniel's argument at this point, so I'm going to try and be aware of that. I wanted to point it out at least.
I'm also heavily interested, so I would like to speak up, although I think I have probably the same bias Kyle does. And Reuven, heck, has also volunteered. He's more independent than the rest of us, so he'll help too.
You all see the document. Is there anything that I need to change to the discussion, to the proposal, or is this a sufficient base? I mean, Daniel, if you really feel uncomfortable in being the judge, be happy to propose anyone, but I have full confidence that you would be the appropriate person.
Well, like I said, the real goal here is we want a community to agree on a way to use DIDs off the ledger.
Yeah.
And that's what really matters, not what Daniel thinks.
That's true.
So I think I'm going to be continually trying to reconcile back to that goal. But of course, it's also possible that, you know, we identify enough dissonance that we really do end up forking a method or something. Either you do or, you know, I mean, it's also possible, Oscar, that you and I get really aligned and then somebody else says, yeah, I don't buy any of this, so I'm going to go do my own thing too.
It's true. Please go ahead.
I think this seems to be something which is beyond the indie community and very interesting topic. So whilst I'm really interested to see a very structured discussion here, I think there will be also other people with other opinions which might not be on this call regularly. So happy to loop them in. So let's see what others will think about this. But I think if the community here will already be in agreement, that's great. And hopefully we get more people from the outside to buy into whatever the conclusion is. Yeah.
Yeah. I've just removed...
I think that's incredibly important.
Yeah. Sorry. I've just removed section 5, which was a compromise, like let's meet in the middle. But I'm really happy to hear that we are going to take this challenge.
Yeah. I have a point of order, and that is, do you want to use the indie mailing list? That's what we'd used up till now, but I'm wondering if maybe there's a better forum. Are the people that are on that list getting impatient with the long emails that Oscar and I are writing? We didn't have any alternative. It seemed like we needed to cover a lot of ground, but I think by ourselves, we were generating more email than the rest of the community together.
The point of the mailing list is to have these conversations. If anybody disagrees, they should mute the thread.
Okay.
I was thinking also about the, as Reuven pointed out, the broader SSI community. It may be, actually, I just saw Reuven pointing this out. They'll probably only want to hear the summary. And they won't read the actual discussion. So I think indie community is fine.
I realize I stated my opinion so strongly in my shutdown conversation. That's not my intention, but that is my opinion.
Great. We need strong opinions here with substantiation. So that ends my presentation. Back to the chairman.
All right.
So I've got a question since we're on open discussion.
Yeah, open discussion now, and we'll wrap it up in 4 minutes. It looks like, Andrew, we won't get to your demo. Go ahead, Kyle.
What was the conclusion of the wire message format that I proposed and then was not able to attend at all?
You talking about the optimization of it that we covered last week?
Yes.
I did post that eventually, finally. I apologize for the delay. I posted the meeting recording. But to save you the long thing, Daniel, Daniel did a pretty good job defending it. If I can summarize, and then if I say something dumb, everyone can help clean that up. But the consensus was it feels good, but we need to make sure that we're sort of and it's good that we have an answer for this, but it seems premature to try and get this adopted before we talk about the wire level at the broader level at IIW.
Okay.
Right. So we're gonna maybe bring this up at IIW, and do so with the thought that, yeah, this seems like a good area to have in our back pocket as something that the indie community wants to recommend, but only kind of conditional on the community buying into some other assumptions. So we need to do those things first.
One of the assumptions is that agent forwarding is useful and a thing you want in your life. Because if that's not, then this conversation kind of melts a little bit away. And so I plan on having an IW session about why agent routing is something you want in your life. And it will cover this because no one cares about our solution if they're not convinced that the problem is actually a problem.
Yep. Okay. I can, that's what I was thinking it would go to, but.
Kyle, are you planning on being at IIW?
Yes, I will. And I'll be at the diff face to face.
That will be useful on both accounts. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Any other conversations on open discussion?
Yeah, it's Paul. I've got, I'm getting a white paper together, which will be done, completed by Friday for overlays. So what I'll do is it's not particularly a hype because the architecture is platform agnostic, but I will send it to a couple of the technical ambassadors and then we can decide how to take that forward.
Excellent. Thank you, Paul. I should also mention that Nathan just posted in the chat the actual wiki link for the Hyperledger Aries proposal. He's been busy during our call.
One item in the things we have left. Is that all right?
Okay, go ahead. Yep. Go ahead.
I just wanted to compliment this team. We've been working on improving the SDK working group. A lot of our best practices have come from how the indie agent calls are run. I think the collaboration that happens here is really valuable and really productive. So thank you.
Speaking of collaboration and value, mechanically next week is IIW and a large portion of this community will be there. I think that trying to have the call from there might be really difficult. Do we have any thoughts on how we're going to handle this? Should we have it anyway? And whoever can make it, or should we cancel it and then just pick up the week after?
I vote for cancel and pick up after.
Okay, so we're going to cancel and not have a meeting, and then we'll have it the week after. And any objection there? Because if you object, you get to run the call.
yeah. Whoever says we should have it runs it.
Yeah, and maybe there'll be a party of people who lament not being at IIW. But either way, okay. I will both affect that in the Google Calendar, and I'll also make a note on the wiki page as well that the next week's meeting is in fact canceled.
And with that, it's 1:30, or some other time in your locale. We will end the call. Thanks all.
Yeah, it's very late in Netherlands. Thank you.
Yes,
thank
it
you
is.
For attending, Oscar.
Yeah. Bye.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.